Doctor Show.
You have all made it through the dance. You have all made it
Coming to you from the X-Access, it's John of All Trades with your host, John X.
Welcome back to the John of All Trades podcast, episode 57. I'm your host, John X. Thanks for joining us. Glad to have you back finally, once again. My goodness, a lot has happened in a month. I think it's been like a month since I've done one of these, where I'm sitting in my basement talking to no one. But I'm doing it in the middle of the day, and I'm not doing it in an office, and I can tell you, it feels amazing. So thank you to everyone who reached out to me, gave me some love, wished me success on the new venture. The new venture? Deft Communications, that's us. DEFTCOM.US. The John of All Trades podcast is a production of Deft Communications, so show us some love there. We are a communications consultancy, training, content, engagement. If you're looking to communicate with your employees, we can help you do it better. If you're looking to engage with the media, get more or better coverage, that's us. That's what we do. Also, podcasting, aka this show, aka the John of All Trades podcast, which is back and which was written about in the Denver Post recently. John Wenzel, entertainment reporter for the Denver Post, called me and he said, "Hey, I'm writing a piece about Denver podcasts, and yours kind of struck me because yours is a little bit different. Yours is a business-focused podcast." And I said, "Yeah, it largely is. I mean, we have a few laughs here, but I talk to people about their jobs and what they do and how they do it. And yeah, that's a little bit different than your sort of garden variety comedians talking to other comedians about pop culture," which I'm not knocking that. I love shows like that, but that's not my show. My show's a little bit different. So we chatted about it. I got three nice big paragraphs right in the middle of it, right in the Friday entertainment section. Huge full page, back page feature. It was gorgeous. It was wonderful. I was thrilled to do it. And naturally, it comes as I'm not doing the show. You know? You kind of think to yourself, you're like, okay, I got to get this new venture rolling. I'm kind of burned out a little bit because doing this show on top of my corporate gig, that was not easy. And at times, not a lot of fun. But the show speaks for itself, and I adore this show, and I love bringing it to you guys. So that pops up. And then like three people I know all reached out to me and said, "Hey, I know people who should be on your show." And I go, "What is happening while I'm on hiatus?" It's like you threaten to leave and it's like the world is a French woman. And like, "Okay, no, I don't care. You go. You leave. It's fine. No, you go. And you start to go. And they're like, no, come back. I can't live without you." And you come back and they're like, "No, that's okay. I want you to go." Which I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I must be rusty at this where I'm talking like a French lady. Good God. So I'm going to skip ahead. Just suffice to say, I link on the John of All Trades website, which is johnofalltrades.us, to the Denver Post article. John Wenzel is just a phenomenal writer. And jerk that he is, described my show better than I have ever described it. And of course, I say jerk adoringly, but really, seriously, this is how he described the show. "On this rare business-oriented podcast, John Ekstrom," which is my real name, I'm not just John X, "indulges his professional curiosity with the oddly compelling minutiae of wildly random jobs." Good God, man. That is so eloquent and so simple. And you know what? It kind of pisses me off that you summed up my show that effectively after talking to me for a mere 15 minutes after I've been thinking about this show for over a year. So, damn it, man. But my hat's off to you. So, great article. Thanks for letting me be a part of it. Also, thanks to These Things Matter and Bree Davies and some of the others who I just like to give a shout out to. They were also featured in the article. The article was ostensibly about These Things Matter, which is a great podcast. Go listen to them. They are terrific. But after you listen to this one, this is episode 57. And since I'm returning, I wanted to return a guest. Someone who just came back from the Philippines doing awesome work providing clean water to the people of the Philippines. Also revisiting her heritage, revisiting her roots. She was the guest on episode 6. She is the guest on episode 57. Brandy Shigley. I adored talking to Brandy, and we get into it a little bit in this episode, but she was one of the first people I talked to who I'd never met before, and I go, okay, you know what? I can do this. I can turn this into a show. It's going to be awesome. And she is, as always, just a delight to talk to. She talks about all the things that she learned. She talks about how emotional it was being on the street where her birth parents live and possibly getting to meet them. That story just had me wrapped the whole time, and I think you'll feel the same way. So we also talk about her charity work, how she's integrating that into her business now. A couple of quick plugs up front. Follow her on Instagram. She's at bshigley, B-S-H-I-G-L-E-Y. And as long as you're looking up stuff, go to her website, doityoulove.us. She plugs those at the end of the episode. Wanted to do them real quick right now. Additionally, follow me on Facebook, John of All Trades. It's J-O-A-T pod. Or on Twitter, J-O-A-T pod. But it's good to be back. I mean, it is good to be talking to people again. I've got interviews lined up. I've got people in the can. I'm just full of all this professional energy. It's Deft Communications. It's what we do. It's awesome. It's fat. So thank you all for joining me on the journey, and thank you all for coming back. Let's get to episode 57. This is Brandy Shigley, and the episode starts right now.
How did we do that last time?
Because I was rocking a different setup. If you remember, I brought my whole laptop and had like my whole mixing board, and it was heavy as shit because the, like, you know, when you have something and it has like the power plug adapter and the thing is like a brick, it's like antimatter. Mm-hmm. It was like that. And so I got this brand new thing, this Zoom H6, which is well worth the investment. It's spectacular. It does it all. And then I just imported it into my computer and edited from there. It's fat. Awesome. Yeah. So sitting here once again.
Hello.
In Brandy Shigley World Headquarters, right?
The B Shigley World Headquarters.
Was
it a year ago that we had met up?
Yeah, it was like a year ago.
Had I gone on my speaking tour?
No, in LA? No, with Sahar? No, not yet. You talked about that.
Oh, so it's been over a year.
Yeah, it's been a while because I interviewed Bird from Rooster and Moon. And he was episode 3, and he said, there's someone you got to talk to. And I said, okay. And so he introduced me to you, and we chatted. We sat here on a Saturday, and I remember you were just coming off some big event, and so we were drinking, like, screwdrivers. I don't know if you remember that. But, yeah, had a great chat. That was a great episode. And I wanted to tell you that you were one of the reasons that I am no longer at my corporate job. And so your voice was one of many, just sort of, without even really knowing it, encouraging me to branch out on my own. So thank you for that.
Absolutely. I
mean, it's what you preach. Do what you love, love what you do, right?
Yeah. You know, interestingly enough, I've been doing that do what you love what you do, believing in it, and like publicly using it since 2002.
Yeah.
And I feel like this year it's really shifted, and it's more about like, do what you love, shine your light, and see how you can apply that to make our world a better place.
Oh, nice.
But I need to kind of come up with something a little bit more condensed than that. But like, yes, it's important to do what you love and love what you do, but it's just as important, if not more important, to know that you're doing good.
Yeah, yeah. To put good out into the world. So, you know, whereas before, you know, do what you love what you do. That's sort of, it's not necessarily inwardly directed, but I would say it's more inwardly directed. And so you're saying you've evolved that to be more outwardly and spread good throughout the world.
Yes.
Okay. That's so cool.
Shine your light.
Shine your light?
Yeah. Shine your light. Like, we all have a gift.
Yeah.
And we need to use it. And when we're all really shining our gifts and we're being happy and we're being passionate about what we're doing because it's in us, how great would the world be if everybody were able to shine their gifts out into the world?
Yeah, 100%. And one of the reasons I wanted to have you back on the show, which I don't, very rarely have I had someone on the show twice. I think you're the second person to ever do it. And the reason I did was because in the first episode, I mean, we covered a lot of your origin story, which was really cool with the handbags and, you know, the Fashion Denver and doing, you know, doing all your entrepreneurial work. And now, just recently, you got back from the Philippines, and I was really inspired by that project, and I actually gave you guys some money for that, too.
Thank you very much.
Of course, yeah. It wasn't much, but it was what I could do, you know?
No, like, and here's the thing about it. It doesn't take much to do anything. $5 in the Philippines will feed an entire family for a couple days.
Wow.
So, you know, everything matters.
No, absolutely. So, you know, I kicked you guys a few bucks to do what you could. And it's, I mean, you got a lot of people. How many donors did you guys end up having?
I'm not exactly sure. We wanted to go for 15,000. And I think by the time it was done, it was at 16,000 or maybe even 17 or 18,000.
Okay. But like how many, do you know how many individual donors you had?
I don't, but I think maybe around 50 to 100.
Wow. So yeah, everyone just kicking you what they could. And I mean, so, okay. So let's back up.
I'm
getting ahead of myself here. So this project, you went to the Philippines. Talk me through sort of how it started, how, like, where did you get the idea? Who are the people you went with?
Mm-hmm.
And how did it grow from there?
So it has been a dream of mine to go to the Philippines for the past decade. And it's kind of one of those bucket list things. Right. And I don't really believe in having a bucket list because I don't know. It's just kind of weird to me. But going to the Philippines.
Yeah, I better do this before I die.
Yeah.
And it's exactly, like gross.
Exactly. But this is something I do want to do before I die. Yeah. And so I feel like I've kind of always said I've wanted to go. I want to go back and make a documentary and see where I'm from. But yet I never really thought it was possible, or I never put it in the forefront, or I just kept pushing it back and pushing it back. So,
and you're the one who turns dreamers into doers.
I know.
And you didn't think it was possible.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
Like, I know. And this is interesting. This is, I need to work on this.
Right.
Enneagram. We need to talk about the Enneagram.
Okay.
I will
keep that in the back of my head.
Enneagram. So anyway, I'm a two and that has a lot to do with things. So anyway, side note. Okay.
Okay.
So, my friend Sammy Taggett, he is a fellow Filipino adoptee, and two guys that started Clean Water Around the World came to Sammy and said, "Hey, we just got back from this trip in Haiti where we took over water filters, and next we want to go to the Philippines. How can we make it more of a story or more of an impact for people to get involved?"
Right.
And Sammy said, "You got to have a story. For example, I'm adopted from the Philippines and it would be neat to go and see where I'm from."
Right.
And Jason and Derek of Clean Water Around the World were like, "Do you want to come with us?" So Sammy was like, "Absolutely.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Why would I not want to?" So then they brought on Norm, a friend of Sammy's. And Norm was born and raised in the Philippines and has a lot of connections back in the Philippines.
Before we get too far ahead, how do you know Sammy?
I know Sammy just through the community, through being entrepreneurs and musicians and people about town.
Just Denver, right?
Yeah.
Just,
do you know Sammy?
I don't know Sammy.
Oh.
No, I've never met him.
Okay.
I was sort of locked away in a corporate filing cabinet for the last 4.5 years.
Well, I'm about to introduce you to some people. Yeah.
That sounds like a plan. But anyway, so keep going.
Okay, so Norm came on board. Norm's mother was part of a coup that tried to overthrow Imelda Marcos in the 70s.
Wow.
Okay. Which is interesting because right at that time they were closing the borders on international adoption, and Sammy and I were the last of those kids out of there until the borders were closed.
Wow.
So Sammy was telling them, like, "I have a friend, her name's Brandy, and she's an adopted Filipino, and she needs to know about this trip." So I was brought into a meeting, and I was just like, "This is amazing. I would be really happy to help you make it a success. But to be honest, you need to take me." I'm going. So right then and there, we decided that I would be going. And so there were two Filipino adoptees, two water guys, and Norm, the native.
Yeah.
And it was four guys and one girl. And we conceptualized this idea at the end of February, I believe, and started our Indiegogo campaign.
Yeah.
Crowdsourcing. And within a month, raised over $16,000 to take our crew safely to the Philippines and be able to take over 55 water filters to villages that didn't have access to clean water.
A question, something I just want to clarify. You guys did Indiegogo over Kickstarter because if you don't raise all the money, you get to keep it all anyway, right?
Right.
Whereas Kickstarter, if you don't hit your goal,
it gets
refunded, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
With Indiegogo, if you don't make your goal, they do take a higher percentage. So you do still lose.
You get an additional hit. Yeah, I get it.
So we raised our money, and 6 weeks later, we're on airplanes to go to the Philippines. And
wait, how quickly did this?
So about 6 weeks.
So, okay, no, but you said February, you guys put the Indiegogo campaign out there?
Mm-hmm.
to go do this like 6 weeks later.
Yeah.
That's quite ambitious.
Yes.
Why the aggressive timeline?
It needed to be done. Sometimes I think that aggressive timelines are the best way to do things.
Right.
You know, like that's maybe one reason why I never went to the Philippines, because I'm like, one day I'll do it.
Oh, yeah. You can just kick it down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's like the old saying, nothing would get done if it weren't for the last minute.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
Okay. I get it.
So we flew out on April 22nd. And we flew to Manila. Mm-hmm. And Manila was our first part of our trip. Now, this was called our pilgrimage with a purpose. Our purpose was to find the roots of Sammy and I, mm-hmm. visit our orphanage, see where we're from.
Were you from the same
from.
Orphanage?
Yes.
Did you already say that?
I'm not sure, but we found out 2 weeks before we went to the Philippines that we're from the same orphanage.
Good God. Was that just, did that totally fuck you up? Was that totally mind-blowing?
Yeah, I kind of have been joking with Sammy, like, maybe we're from the same orphanage. I've been saying that for years. And right. then sure enough, we're from the same orphanage.
And then goddamn it, it's actually true.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So the first part of the pilgrimage was finding our roots. And then, so for the first 2 days we spent in Manila, and on this one specific day, our second day there, our goal was to find my biological parents' neighborhood, mm-hmm. and just kind of take some film footage of that, and then to visit our orphanage.
Yeah.
And in the Philippines, driving is insane. It seems like to us there are no rules and like nobody follows any kind of anything. But in the Philippines and being in those cars, you realize that they totally have a system to their chaos.
Yeah, yeah.
In America, we honk for people to get out of the way. In the Philippines, they honk to let you in.
Oh, wow.
So there are just cars coming at you. And Norm usually sat shotgun. He was the only one who can speak the Filipino language of Tagalog.
Okay.
And he was just like white knuckling it, because it was like, you're so crazy. Like, people just walk out and people will just stop. And
right.
It's oh my
just,
gosh.
It's just like whirring. Isn't
yeah.
It? Like, it just constantly, just, it's like a machine that never turns off.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. The only thing I have to compare it to is I took this insane cab ride in, Naples, Italy, where we get in and the guy starts blasting American pop music as loud as he can. And that was when that Avicii song was really popular, that Wake Me Up song.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy actually hit a pedestrian on the way there. She didn't seem to mind. She,
mm-hmm.
she just sort of hit and she goes, oh, I guess I'm in the road. And we got there. It was like getting off a roller coaster.
Oh my God.
So it was bad. Yeah. my wife didn't enjoy it as much as I did, but I go, hey, we're alive. And that
yeah.
was quite the adrenaline rush.
Yes.
So.
It's
crazy.
It's an adrenaline rush. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. There, it's just crazy there.
That's awesome.
So we had a driver who was driving us around, and I had the address of my biological parents' address on my birth certificate.
Right.
So we were heading over there, and we would get closer and closer into the neighborhoods. I remember the road that we took out into the neighborhood, just so much poverty and
yeah.
people and beauty all at the same time.
Really?
It was just really shocking to my system to see all of this. Little girls begging and knocking on your window and like pointing
yeah.
at their mouth that they're hungry. And when we didn't give them any money, she just hit the car, and we all thought she scratched it, but she didn't.
Wow.
But that was interesting to see. As we got closer and closer, my GPS was like, you are 1 mile from the location. And I remember being at this intersection where there were streets coming at us at all different angles, and it was raining and there were people everywhere. And just right at that second, at that exact intersection, I just broke into tears, and the tears just flooded down my cheeks, and they were tears of so much overwhelming senses, knowing that I am in the neighborhood that my biological parents lived in, and that I am here with people that could be related to me, and that I was finally fulfilling a dream that I've dreamt about for yeah. so long. And all of this just hit me right at that intersection. And just like the sky that was raining down
just
so
buckets,
hard, it was
right?
just I just was buckets of tears. And I probably cried for like 5 minutes, and then I'm like, okay, boom,
yeah, yeah,
done.
Yeah,
yeah, feels so much
back
better.
In the moment, yeah.
Yeah. And that's one thing. I get out my emotions, and then I feel much better, and then
sure.
I can move on. So we're getting closer and closer, and the GPS was just like getting super confused. And I remember we had to flip a UE to get back over somewhere else. And our driver ever so eloquently maneuvered through crazy traffic that was right in a market. So in the marketplaces in these countries, there's just like wall to wall animal fruits, right. vegetables, like all of these things.
And yeah, he's textiles, just, like yes. just one thing after another, yes. right? Just like a hive.
Totally.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally. So he's managing to just go around and just doing it so greatly. And finally, we're lost, and the GPS is like, you're not anywhere close.
Yeah.
And then I was just like, Lord, show us the way.
Yeah.
And we literally turned right, and there was Bakud. There was the street we had been looking for.
Wow.
And we were at 400 Bakud. And I'm like, where is 500? Why can't we find it? Why is this GPS not seeing it? There was just a bridge there. So our driver parks. And I'm impatient. I'm just like, I just want to get out. I can just walk a block. Just let me out. And the driver was like, no, just stay here. I'll be right back. So he goes into the police station right across the street.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all like, what's he doing? Like, why can't we just walk a block? And he comes back. And mind you, on my birth certificate, my name is baby girl Ignacio Gonzalez.
Right.
Born to Erlinda Ignacio and Manuel Gonzalez.
Right. I remember that. Yeah.
So he comes back. Huh. We talked about that.
Yeah. No, you told me the whole story because you told me the whole story behind 23.
Yeah.
And you go, what time was I born?
This is all the latest developments of this. Holy moly.
Yeah. No, I remember that from the show because you said, you know, everything you do is 23.
Mm-hmm.
And when you were 23, you know, you told this whole story about breaking down like in a bathroom.
Yeah. Yes.
And then, you know, you talked about wanting to see your birth certificate. What time was I born? Like that whole deal. Yeah. No, I remember.
So
it well.
Here I am at.
Can you see why I wanted to talk to you so bad? Right.
In Manila.
Yeah.
In my parents' neighborhood, somewhere around 503 Bakud, that address that was on my birth certificate.
Crazy.
There I am in that neighborhood. Only 503 Bakud doesn't exist anymore.
Okay.
So I'm impatiently waiting in the car. Like, I just wish I could get out and walk a block. Finally, he comes back to car and he's like, okay, the Ignacios are home.
Oh my God. No.
We all drop our jaws.
Yeah. You're just
my
frozen,
heart,
right?
I'm frozen. And all of the Jason and Derek, you know, they're making this documentary, bring out their cameras.
Yeah.
We're all in total shock. And we get out of the car and suddenly it was like I really felt like I was in a dream.
Yeah.
And so I get out of the car and I'm like, shit, Sammy, what do I do? And he's like, just put one foot in front of the other.
Yeah.
And so with Sammy holding on to one of my hands and the film guys behind me and Norm leading the way with our driver,
yeah.
we walk down this little alley. And in this little alley were just all these beautiful little homes.
Wait a minute. How did they know? Like, how did they know the Ignacios were home?
Because
like,
that's the way the Philippines is.
That's just the way it works?
That's the way the neighborhoods are.
Oh, my God.
And the neighborhoods, by the way, the neighborhoods and villages are called barangay. And that's like another word for neighborhood or village. And they each actually have their own set of rules and laws. Okay. So we're in the Bakud barangay.
So this is why you could, like, this is why you couldn't just walk up. So you're getting impatient because this is the way this neighborhood works.
Yeah.
Sort of.
I don't necessarily think we weren't allowed to walk up, but I think it was more, I mean, I just wanted to see their house. I didn't meet anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
So, we are walking to the Ignacio's house.
Yeah.
And walking down this little alley where there's all these little cute places tucked away.
Hmm.
And we turn right at the end of the alley to the right and there was Ignacio's on their door.
My God.
And I'm just like kind of shaking. And Norm, the driver, ring the doorbell and this man, probably my age, comes to the door and they're like, they're explaining like, hi, we are looking for the Ignacio family. And this guy said, well, I'm Ignacio. I'm Rev Ignacio. And I don't know Erlinda or Manuel Gonzalez.
Huh.
So it was like immediately like a sweep of like, whoa, okay.
Yeah, did you exhale?
Whoa, yeah, I exhaled.
Yeah, yeah.
Mild disappointment, but just like, whoa. But,
yeah, probably disappointment and relief.
Yeah, totally.
Because I can't imagine what that would have felt like.
Yeah.
And just listening to you describe it, I'm like, oh my God. Like,
yes.
I'm sitting here just, I'm holding my cord wrappers. I can't.
Yeah.
Like, I'm fidgety.
So, he asks his wife, hey, do we know Erlinda Ignacio? They don't know any Erlinda Ignacios. Mm. So he's right in the middle of lunch and he's like, let me just wipe off my hands and let's go find your family.
Okay.
So he wipes off his hands and by this time I'm more like, whoo. So he takes us to the barangay leader into this little office space. And this guy, this sweet old guy with beautiful eyes and warm, happy face and beautiful dark brown skin greets us and greets the film crew. And him and Rev talk and he goes through all of the stacks of papers looking for Ignacio or Gonzalez.
Yeah, yeah.
And he doesn't find anything there. And these records went back to 1991, and this was 1975. Mm-hmm. So he's like, no, we can't find anybody. I'm sorry, but go to so-and-so's house. They might know. They've lived in this neighborhood for a long time.
Weird.
So Rev took us on this adventure of going to different people's houses to ask them if they knew my biological family.
Wow.
And these people greeted us with so much love and so much kindness in their hearts, inviting us into their homes. And even though they didn't know my biological family, I felt nothing but family there.
Yeah, just community and
community.
Connectedness.
The Philippines is all about that connectivity. So we go to a couple more families' house. Nobody knew Orlando or Manuel Gonzalez. And he takes us back over to where our car is and buys us some tea with boba in it. And we say goodbye. We exchanged information and I'm in touch with him on Facebook. But both the driver and Norm were saying, like, Brandy, that guy is probably one of your cousins because that's the way it is in the Philippines.
No,
these Filipino families are having tons of kids and they do stay close into their neighborhoods or part of them stay close into that neighborhood. So that's something that I would like to follow up with Rev and just see like, hey, like maybe we are related somehow.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
So that was that adventure. And that was, we had to race from the Bacood neighborhood back to our hotel to pick up toys and games that we bought for the orphans at my orphanage, at Sammy and I's orphanage, race back through town in traffic to get to our orphanage. And, we did that and found our orphanage and,
Before you talk about the orphanage, there's something I'm just curious about. I know you're very close with your adoptive parents.
Mm-hmm.
When you told them this story, what was their reaction to it?
So much love and support.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they've been so supportive. And I think, like, you know, maybe it's because I'm older and it's a different scenario as, like, if I were to talk about it when I was young. But even then, my parents are so dang cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
I was just curious because, I mean, we're friends on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you talk about your dad and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just curious. I'm like, huh, I wonder what their reaction was. I didn't expect it to be anything other than positive and supportive, but I thought it behooved me to ask.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's get back to the orphanage.
Okay.
So you're picking up the toys and
and
everything. And so you go deliver it to this orphanage.
Mm-hmm.
What happened next?
So we were greeted again with the most friendliest of faces and these young women that were the social workers at this orphanage. And it was, first of all, just a lot to take in. Like, oh my gosh. Actually, I don't even think I've thought about it until just now, but like, whoa, this is where I was for a little while of my babyhood.
Yeah.
Everything at the orphanage is probably exactly the same as it was back in 1975.
Yeah.
The cribs are old cribs.
Just ancient.
Ancient cribs. Everything is just very, it has not aged in quite a long time.
Yeah.
And our mission there was to entertain the kids and to bring them some goodness. So I brought my magic along, the
That's
great
right.
Brandina, and Sammy brought his guitar. Actually, we bought a guitar and a ukulele.
Oh,
and
nice.
We left them there at the orphanage so they could use them.
Cool.
And Sammy entertained them and sang songs, and I did some failed magic tricks. Like, my first three tricks, for whatever reason, malfunctioned. And so, like, by the second trick, these orphans were just like, who did you bring over here to entertain us? But
they're,
it was really
like, is this an anti-comedy show?
Yeah.
It's like Neil Hamburger.
Totally. So, although the magic,
what happened? Like, what tricks were you doing? Like how?
Just making things disappear and making things vanish. You know,
but they didn't so much vanish.
They didn't so much vanish. They didn't vanish at all. So, I had even said, "All right, guys, I'm just going to do three more tricks," and one of the women heard this little kid say, no, just one more trick, please. and our whole team was cracking up at the reaction of these kids responding to.
That's like being at the Apollo or something. Like,
oh my gosh. It was like, so basically the orphans in the RSCC in Quezon City, not so much a fan of the Great Brandina. That's okay. So it was really fun just to be back there and see where we're from. And there was this little boy that we had met that was like a year old, and he needed to get his stomach turned inside out, or he had something going on with his stomach, but they couldn't afford to do that for him because it's 40,000 pesos.
Wow.
Well, I pulled out my converter and saw that it was $650. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, right now, Sammy and I are working on getting them that $650 because we have that in some other donations that we can get that to them.
Wow. Cool.
So that was what that adventure was like, going to our orphanage.
That's certainly, and I know it's not intended this way, but that's certainly a weird commentary on the U.S. healthcare system.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds fairly complicated, the surgery itself, but $650.
I actually just learned today by somebody in the medical industry that surgery is really, really easy.
Oh.
But for some reason, that same surgery would be $20,000 here.
Good God. Why?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, that's a whole other conversation, but I was struck by that. You said 40,000 pesos. I go, okay. Well, that's probably pretty expensive. And then you tell me $650. I'm like, okay, crazy exchange rate.
Yeah.
And number two, what the hell, man?
Yeah.
Like, what's up with our system?
Yeah. But,
I mean, yeah, that's a much more complicated topic. So,
yeah.
Okay.
So that was what was like, it was like visiting our orphanage.
Did you get as emotional there as you did driving up to potentially your parents' house?
No. And I thought I would be. But honestly, and even that intersection where I broke down into tears, it wasn't so much tears of sadness. It was tears of gratitude and tears of just like
release.
This is so beautiful. Totally release. That rain was so perfect. So when I
it's
went
very
to
poetic,
the
way you describe it.
Oh, it felt poetic.
Yeah, yeah.
When I went to the orphanage, I was more happy to see these wonderful people running the orphanage and these happy smiles. Good. And so I just felt nothing but gratitude and happiness there.
And the kids who will heckle you out of a couple of tricks.
Yeah.
I mean, that's great.
Yeah.
That speaks to, no, we're good. That's,
yeah.
You're doing, you're doing just fine.
Just move on now. Move on.
Yeah. Yeah. One more trick. We'll be nice and we'll give you that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So, that was a fun time. And then we went straight from there to Norm's cousin who made us this delicious Filipino feast. That was the best food that we had eaten in the Philippines was that food.
Describe for me what is in a Filipino feast.
There's chicken adobo, there's always rice. One yummy thing I learned was garlic rice.
Nice.
And it's really, really good.
Well, that sounds all right.
Lots of fish and weird other things like oxtail and
nice.
Like the chewy, lardy part of pork. It's pretty good.
It sounds pretty meat heavy, though.
It is pretty meat heavy.
Wow.
It is pretty meat heavy. And, you know, in all honesty, I would say Filipino food's not really my favorite.
No.
No.
Hmm. Well, I mean, you wouldn't be able to say that had you not gone.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can't think of a place that I've been that if I didn't like it or if I didn't like some aspect of it, at least I was happy to have experienced it. So, I mean, that's one of the things you learn while traveling. So that's really cool.
Yeah. So the next morning we flew from Manila to Tacloban. Tacloban is one of the cities that was absolutely destroyed by Typhoon Haiyan, or Typhoon Yolanda is the local name. Haiyan was the international name.
Okay.
And
why the difference?
I don't know. I don't know why they do that. I feel like if you're going to have a local name, just use the dang local name.
Yeah, agreed.
I mean, like Typhoon Haiyan doesn't seem any crazier than Typhoon Yolanda.
Yeah, no, agreed.
So I don't know. But so we flew into this city that we flew down onto this beautiful island. And we were greeted with like this guy who it was raining, and it was the type of runway where you park on the tarmac and then you walk out.
Yeah, yeah.
I always feel like I'm like a movie star when I'm doing that.
Yeah, or like Nixon getting impeached.
Yeah. So it didn't feel like that, but we were greeted with this guy who popped out yellow umbrellas and to everybody, and then that was just fun to see all these yellow umbrellas on the tarmac.
Yeah,
and then
cool.
When we got into the airport, it's like one of those airports where the walls are open. Everything there is really open, like it's not so shut in.
Right.
And there were like 10 guys in matching uniforms just singing. They sang, greeted us with the song. And right there I was like, okay, like, yep, that's, I get it.
Yeah, totally.
I like to greet people with songs too.
You sang a song on the last episode you did with me.
Yeah.
Two songs actually.
Good.
Yeah.
So that was just really fun to be greeted that way and see so much happiness right from when we landed. And knowing that 10,000 people died in this town in one typhoon.
Yeah.
So we immediately got into our little truck. It was like a four-door truck with a little mini bed in the back. And that was our transportation for the next week. And
wow.
We had teamed up with an organization called WAND. And they work on water and sanitation and clean water and do all kinds of wonderful things in the areas of the Philippines. So we teamed up with them and they were our guides. And they took us on a tour of Tacloban, and we got to see, we didn't get to see, but we saw the damage that was done.
Yeah.
And just buildings and roofs demolished. And that was really crazy to see such destruction that's still around.
When was the typhoon?
In November of 2013.
Okay. So, wow, yeah, a lot of that still persists.
It's, yeah.
I mean, that really puts into perspective just how destructive those things can be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, especially in what you're describing as a poorer country.
Mm-hmm.
That's very illuminating.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that you say a poor country.
Poorer because, is what
well, I... Well, you know, when I first landed in the Philippines, I thought it was so poor and I didn't know how people lived that way.
Yeah.
But then when I left there, I saw that they're living just fine. And yes, they do need help with certain things such as clean water, but they truly live in a world of love and community.
No, of course.
And that's all they need. And so I feel like we just have way excessive stuff here.
Oh, we have a ton of stuff.
Yeah. So anyway,
And obviously I'm using the, in terms of poor, I'm using traditional sort of Western definitions mm-hmm. of
yeah.
wealth.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know.
Yeah. It's taking, yeah. Everybody that I saw all wore flip flops.
Oh yeah.
People doing construction on these places that they're rebuilding are in flip flops. People in motorcycles that are carrying their entire family on there without any helmets are in flip flops.
Wow.
We rode in the back of a truck standing up going 40 to 50 miles an hour, just holding on to the little roll bar thing. But that's just how you do it there. And I almost feel like because it's not so restrictive with laws and all of these things, people are just more safe.
Yeah, they're like dialed into the process.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you mentioned that with the traffic too. We have so many like signs and rules that you have to pay attention mm-hmm. to. There's a lot to keep track of. Whereas mm-hmm. if you're just sort of dialed in and like looking at other drivers
yes.
and like making eye contact and stuff, you'll be much better off in a lot of cases.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Weird.
I remember there was a time we were going from Tacloban to Ormoc, which is another town, and our driver, oh my gosh, like there were times, like you just go. We're going on these roads right at like a truck and just and like so like there were times where you just could not look out the right. window, but then you just trusted that he knew yeah. what he was doing.
Yeah, it's almost like the drivers have telepathy with each other.
Yeah,
right? Awesome.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
So when we were in Tacloban and Ormoc, we were out there delivering water filters, and originally we were thinking we would just get out on our feet and see who needed a water filter, but fortunately, through the grace of the universe, we were connected with this organization that is a non-governmental organization that has millions of dollars to do good with.
Nice.
And they worked alongside with us and took us up to our first village and were able to multiply. We only could afford 32 filters in this one village. And they're like, well, there's 65 families, so we'll use our filters as well. And then you guys can have all of these jugs. And they were just able to like multiply everything.
Nice.
So we were able to serve an entire village. And we got into our vans and our trucks and headed up through the beautiful countryside of the Philippines to all of these rice fields, to just the most beautiful skies and trees and vegetation and
yeah.
people just walking. Like, these gorgeous families were just walking on the side of the road and everybody was waving and so happy. And like you would drive by just these little shacks that sometimes didn't even have finished walls. And
wow.
the Filipinos were just sitting out on their front stoop and waving and talking, and oh, it was just amazing.
That's funny.
So they took us up to our village, and this village was just full of so many wonderful people. We talked to those people and learned that some of them had lost their father from drinking the water, that many of them have been sick for a long time because of the water. And
I was curious, what did they do before you guys showed up with these water filters? Like, would they just drink like unsanitary water, mm-hmm. or would they, you know, trek for miles and miles to get clean water? Like, how did it work?
They would drink dirty water.
Yeah.
They would go down to their well and drink that water, or they would boil their water. And these water filters that we provided them, we just provided them with a Jimmy can, you know, those jug things, and the filters. So these can be used indefinitely forever and ever and ever, as long as they clean it out once a day.
Okay.
So that's each good. Family has their own jug, so they can go to their water source, fill it up, and then have water for the day that's clean.
Nice.
So it was really fun to just see how this organization worked. And they started it off not by saying, like, you need water filters, but by educating them in a really fun way.
Yeah.
And then they broke out the sound system and sang three songs with a choreographed dance. And I was just like, this is the Filipino way. Like,
yeah.
In the Philippines, there would be nothing but a hut and a karaoke machine.
Wow.
Yeah. So that week we spent time really just visiting these villages and exploring where their water system is and how many families we could serve. And there was one village that had a rain catching system that caught hundreds of gallons of water. And then what we did is we attached our filter to the end of that nozzle.
Nice.
So now an entire village can have access with this one filter.
Yeah, like at the central water source. That's awesome.
Yeah. So that was really amazing just to see all of these wonderful, beautiful villages. And then one thing that really, really meant a lot to me down there was we had an opportunity to just be out on a boat and relax for a couple of hours and just be in the ocean.
Nice.
And our drivers, Ellie and Juan, knew about my adoption story, and I'd shown them my paperwork. And I was sitting on the back of the boat with Ellie, and he's looking at me and he's like, you know, and he doesn't speak very good English, you know, your face is very familiar. And I said, oh, really? And he's like, we have a friend, and his name is Manuel Gonzalez, and he is from Zamboanga del Norte. My biological father's from Zamboanga del Norte. And he said, we're going to find out if that is your father.
Huh.
And if it is, we were meant to meet here, and we were meant to be your guides. And he's like, and if it's not him, we're going to find him. And that's just the way that it is. Like, that, you know, the people in your community.
Just everyone trying to help each other.
Yes.
Wow. It's got to be incredibly powerful to experience that. Because I would say, bridging back to our first episode, that's sort of what you do every day here. Or, you know, that's sort of your mission. You turn dreamers into doers. You connect people in the community where connections can be made.
Mm-hmm.
And so to have that come back around to you,
mm-hmm.
I can't imagine how that must feel.
Completion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll bet. Because, I mean, that's your origin story. And to come and sort of close the loop on that, it's incredibly compelling to listen to. I mean, I've just been sitting here going,
mm-hmm.
God, when you were, you would post about it while you were going through the trip.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would see things, and I think you weren't even back yet. And I sent you a Facebook message. I'm like, would you come back on my show?
Mm-hmm.
You're like, yeah. And then, yeah, ran into you. So I'm so happy we're doing this. So you're out on this boat. Was that towards the end of the trip?
Yes, it was towards the end of the trip. And I need to follow up with him and see if he found out anything. I think part of me is like afraid.
Yeah.
Well, but as an adult, like I do want to track down my biological parents, not even necessarily to like be like, I'm your long lost daughter, but to be like, what's up? Like, how has life been?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. What are you up to?
Yeah.
Like, I'd like to learn more about you.
Yes.
Yeah.
That, yeah.
Like, no, like there's no agenda here other than just, hey, who are you?
And, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's awesome.
And that might, again, be like just the age that I'm at. It's, you know, I'm an adult now. Well, I mean, I guess I technically have been an adult for a while.
Sure.
But yeah, so that's just, that is really cool. And I totally forgot that I had told you all of that history.
Yeah.
And yet I've been talking about that birth certificate in 23. You know what? In all honesty, I don't think I connected those two into that full circle until you just said that.
Funny. So when you came back, actually first, mm-hmm. before you came back, I remember one of the things you sort of had apprehension about before going was the travel styles of your of who you were going with.
Mm-hmm.
Because you learn a lot about someone when you travel with them. You know, sometimes they don't always mesh and, you know, you can end up butting heads. How did you get along with your travel companions?
I would say absolutely swimmingly perfect.
Fantastic.
And we talked about that. We finally got to all sit down and meet together a couple days ago. And we are just so grateful for all of our energy together. Being the only girl, I thought would be hard, but they're like my brothers.
Yeah.
I think the hard part, which really wasn't even that hard, was we had one bathroom, but we always had our own beds. But those guys are my brothers, and it was just fun to
probably
be
even
able
more
to,
so now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally.
Oh yeah, absolutely. They were not my brothers then, but now they're my brothers. But I would say if anything, the way that it's changed me was I was definitely telling a lot of dick jokes when I came back and talking about poop.
Sure. Yeah, a lot of fart humor.
Yeah,
that kind
fart
of thing.
Humor. But that was just how we, that was how we would kill the time sitting in traffic in one cab with five of us in Manila. It was just like, see who could say the grossest thing ever. And it was fun because throughout the trip, you would be with different people. So Derek and I would be riding in the back of the truck in Ormoc and having these really wonderfully deep conversations. And then later on, we could go have like a poop story or something like that.
Yeah,
but,
of course.
But just the way that I related to each and everybody as individuals and as a group was really fun. There were definitely times where I was just like, you guys go. I'm just going to take some girl time and hang out by myself. And but for the most part,
I need
part,
a minute.
Yeah. And they probably needed that for me, especially like, you know, my little monthly friend came.
Oh yeah.
And so I thought that would just be really fun to be like, hey guys, guess what? And like,
let's talk about this.
Yeah. And they were just like, oh, gross, Brandy. And I'm like, I know I'm going to keep talking about this because it's grossing you out.
Well, it's so funny. When I was 18, I had a girlfriend and I had to go buy tampons for her.
Mm-hmm.
I was weird about it. Like, I was standing in the aisle and I was unaware of
the variety.
Yeah. There's like a ton of options.
Yeah.
Why would I have any reason to know that?
Right.
But I sort of picked like, I think a variety pack just on my, here you go. Because she didn't give me specific enough instructions, which I think is her fault.
Yeah.
But so, I was like 18 and I go, oh, this isn't any big deal. And I go, oh, you know what this is? This just means that, I have a girlfriend and that I'm not a total like dipshit about it.
Exactly.
And so it's like, this is something that a woman deals with. So fucking what's the problem?
Yeah.
Here? And so it was at that point I go, okay, I don't need to be afraid of this anymore. And I'm married now. So
yeah.
You know.
Now you can be like, honey, I'll go get you your tampons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Always has this system. I don't know if they still do, but they would have like, clovers, hearts, and these different symbols. And I'm like, are those for the boyfriends?
Like lucky charms?
Yeah, just go find the bag with the clovers on them.
God.
Yeah.
So when you came back, was it hard to get back into it? Did you experience like a come down? Like,
I experienced just crazy emotions coming back. It took me until I would say like a few days ago to finally feel good. And it was so much to process. And
did you get like a minor depression when you came back?
Yeah, I had not minor. I think it was major.
Okay.
Yeah, I think anytime I have a big event, I'm always have this depression afterwards.
Yeah.
But this is like a lifelong goal that was now over. So yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
And I just like, I was like, what am I doing? And how do I get back into things? And you know, how do I just go move forward?
How do I go back to my normal life?
Yeah.
I mean, God.
Well, I don't.
Well, no. Okay.
And that's the cool thing was that I was like, I need to go back to my normal life. But how do you go back to a normal life that's not your normal life anymore because everything that just happened to you impacted you?
Yeah.
So I was going through this couple week depression and just trying to get back into the swing of things. And Sahar came out here, who's my co-inspirer from our Word Love tour. She's an amazing woman born in Iran. And
yeah. When you were on the show last time, we talked about that and you told me a little bit of her story, how you guys met on the dance floor.
Yeah. Yep.
And you know, you guys were, I think at the time in the planning stage of your Word Love tour.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
Yeah. So she came out, and since our word love tour, she wrote a book, and she came out to do her book reading out here. And so she was out here, and she always inspires me. And it was when I was sitting down with her and feeling like, geez, Sahar, like, you did it. You wrote a book and since our tour. And then it just hit me like, and I just went to the gosh dang Philippines.
Yeah.
We both accomplished something that we've been dreaming about since our tour. And with her just being this amazing, inspiring woman, she really helped me to take everything that I learned in the Philippines and not just forget about it and be like, okay, that's done. But she helped me to remember to incorporate everything that I had just been through and keep it moving.
So
keep it going.
Not just compartmentalize it.
Right.
And this was a part of my life. It's now over. How am I going to integrate it?
Exactly.
Cool. Wow.
Yeah. So she just got me thinking. And that's, I think, one thing that I've, that's kind of been a struggle. But as I go into the next decade of my life,
yeah.
I am learning that I love helping other people. But when it comes to myself, I often feel like I can't do my own goals.
Okay. Weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you asked me to come back to, I don't even remember the term you used, but
the Enneagram.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's circle back to that.
Okay.
Is that a good place for it?
Yes.
Okay.
So basically the Enneagram is it's a personality type test thing.
Yeah.
But it is all about like your soul.
Okay.
This is like the personality of your soul. And you just have to research it because I can't really, it's so hard for me to.
No, that's cool. We'll link to it on the companion blog post.
But I talked about that in my book club yesterday with someone who's an expert in the Enneagram.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a 2, which is the helper.
Yeah.
And the helper, we love to help people, but we feel like we can't help ourselves.
Interesting.
And it was like, it's so true. Like, I believe the heck in other people, and I know that they can do it. But for some reason, when it comes to me, I feel like I don't know if I can do that, and I doubt my own self.
Weird.
I know. So anyway, that's just something that just realizing that is really helping me understand what my own blocks are for myself. But so talking about what was going on in incorporating the Philippines into now, what I am going to be doing is in June, I'm doing a dress drive with two wonderful friends of mine. I call them my urban angels. And we're going to do a dress drive where we're going to invite designers and crafters to make these dresses. And they'll have them at an event we're doing on June 13th. And basically, the public is invited to come. They can buy a dress for $20 donation plus.
Mm-hmm.
Their name will go in that dress. And then the money from the dresses is going straight to Haiti to feed the Haitians.
Wow.
They need that money. The dresses are going to be divided into Haiti and my orphanage.
Nice.
For their 51st birthday.
Sweet.
Their 51st anniversary of the orphanage. So that's one way that I can keep helping that community to keep it fresh in my mind and to stay passionate about it. Also,
You're marrying before Brandy, but Brandy before Philippines with Brandy after Philippines.
Yes.
I mean, that sounds like almost the perfect union of the two, I mean, of you know, you before and you after.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, that's a really cool way to say that. And then another thing I'm seeing is just like, you don't have to go to the Philippines or cross the world to make change. We can make change here. So I realized for my 40th birthday that instead of having a party, I'm inviting all of my friends, you're invited.
Oh, fantastic.
To come here, bringing lunch stuff to make sandwiches and chips and fruit.
Yeah.
And together we're going to make these combo packs of love. I've always been a fan of combo packs. I love little things in bags. And when you pull it out, it's a fun surprise.
Right.
So what I want to do is I want to create these combo packs of love that are just brown bag lunches with messages of hope and inspiration and love. And then we're going to hit the streets and feed the homeless.
Wow. That sounds tremendous.
Yeah. That's one of the things our clean water group wanted to do is just keep the momentum going and get people involved. And you can get involved simply by feeding the homeless, I used to drive by the homeless people on the corners and just roll my eyes.
Right.
But you know what? they need help too.
Sure.
So is 50 cents really going to hurt you? And they're not always going to use it for boot. You know what? Like, we just don't know. So I've just been a lot more open to like just helping people when I can.
Yeah. Just in whatever form that takes.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, we actually need to wrap up this. Every time I talk to you, which we don't connect all that often, whenever we get to do this, I'm always like just so thrilled because you are a ray of sunshine.
Aww.
And having you on my show the first time, it was right when the podcast was in its infancy, and you were the first person I talked to who I didn't know beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
And so I go, okay, I can do this. Like, I can sit down with someone who I don't know,
uh-huh.
and like, we can have a really interesting conversation, like about something.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, that really inspired me to, I go, okay, I can do this. And so circling back with you, it's a thrill. It's a treat. So
thank you so much for having me back on. And thanks for giving me the opportunity to share the story. And thanks for opening up my eyes to things like that I didn't realize, like the whole full circle thing.
Yeah, no
Sometimes
kidding.
It's like you don't really realize what's going on until you can communicate it and process it.
Oh, yeah.
Like communicating for me is processing it. So I really thoroughly enjoyed this opportunity to process all of that.
Yeah, me too. And so... It's at this point in the show where I want you to plug whatever you want to plug.
Mm-hmm.
Anything out on the internet, where can we find you? How can people get in touch with you? How can they get involved? How can they help? Like whatever you want to plug right now,
mm-hmm.
go ahead and plug it.
Well, you know, I think I am a big fan of Instagram. I think it's great to be able to capture a moment, a thought, an idea through a picture and be able to share it that way. So most of all the things I'm doing, I just post on Instagram and then it shuffles through everything. But I'm at B Shigley, and that's just B-S-H-I-G-L-E-Y. My website's dowhatyoulove.us, and that will take you to all of my music projects, fashion projects. I think Instagram is the most efficient way to see what's going on and how you can get involved in things.
Instagram is the bee's knees.
Yes. Or the bee shiggly knees.
The bee shiggly knees. Or I was going to say, as Adam Caton Holland says, the bee's pajamas.
Yes. Oh, I have a quick question for you. Now that you're doing your own thing full time,
yeah.
What one thing do you feel like held you back from quitting your job?
My corporate job?
Mm-hmm.
On a practical level, healthcare,
mm-hmm.
and then on a less practical level, on more of sort of an emotional level, it was probably fear of failure,
mm-hmm.
and in a very perverse way, fear of success.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like you're afraid of your own potential,
mm-hmm.
because you're afraid of failing, number one, but it's almost like you're afraid of, like, I've carved out this nice little rut for myself. What am I going to be when I'm not in it?
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy to get comfortable. Even if you're unhappy, it's easy to just sort of live in that space and say, hey, whatever. This is my life. This is how I define myself. And the idea of not knowing,
mm-hmm.
I think, is terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And so now that I'm sort of out of it and doing my own thing, I go, holy shit, this is way better.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm 3 weeks out. It was 3 weeks ago yesterday that I got laid off. And so I'm just scratching the surface,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not afraid anymore, because what is there to be afraid of?
Exactly.
It's awesome. You've
got, just keep up the momentum. I think it's important to surround yourself with people that inspire you and can keep you moving forward.
Oh,
and
yeah.
To
every
understand
day push.
Those ruts.
Yeah. Every day push. And yeah, I mean, I could just as easily get into another rut, but
yeah. And you will.
I'm sure I will.
I'm in ruts, like, sometimes on a daily basis. So.
I mean, that's life, though, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It'll be all good. Right now, it's kind of like you. You know, everything is fresh and new, and there's possibilities, and it's all too new to get bogged down by any
mm-hmm.
of it. All of it is just excitement, and I see the sun shining in a way I haven't seen
mm-hmm.
in a long time.
That's amazing. It's congratulations. Terrific.
Thank you so much. And you know, thanks for sharing your story and continued success to you.
Thank you.
As always.
Thank you.
Pleasure, Brandy.
Kamusta ka?
And that wraps up episode 57 of the John of All Trades podcast with Brandy Shigley. Really appreciate her coming back on the show. And closing up her story, we brought it full circle. I did not realize that we had an opening that needed to be filled in, but we did it. Put a button on it. Highlighted her work in the Philippines. We highlighted some of the things she's doing now, and it's just a pleasure and a privilege every time I get to talk to her. So big ups to Brandy. Follow her on Instagram @bshigley, B-S-H-I-G-L-E-Y. Let's pay some love to our our sponsor. We are finally back. Sponsor is 4Degrees, number 4, D-E-G-R-E dot E-S. They are the proud sponsor of the John of All Trades podcast, and they are your online communications firm. Good partners with Deft Communications. They will do social media marketing, social media advertising, text message services, list building, grassroots support. They got it all. That one consumer you're trying to reach that you can't, and you can't do it cost effectively, they will help you find them and get you in front of the people that need to know about your business. So hit them up at number 4, DEGRE.ES. God damn, it's good to be back. I am so happy. Episode 57 is in the can. 58 is coming up next week. Got a great guest lined up. That one is super inspiring. Teases on Monday on Facebook and Twitter. JOAPod for both. John of All Trades is a production of Deft Communications. And until next week, it's what we say.